Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to 48 Hours ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app. Need more true crime in your life? An Audible membership can solve that. Audible is the ultimate destination for thrilling audio entertainment. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from the entire catalog. Don't miss The Serial Killer's Apprentice by Katherine Ramsland and Tracy Allman. It follows the true story of how Houston's deadliest murder turned a kid into a killer in training. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/48hours or text 48 hours to 500-500. That's audible.com/48hours or text 48 hours to 500-500 to try Audible free for 30 days. audible.com/48hours.
Have you ever covered a carpet stain with a rug, ignored a leaky faucet, pretended your half-painted living room is supposed to look like that? Well, you're not alone. We've all got unfinished home projects, but there's an easier way. When you download Thumbtack, it's easier to care for your home from top to bottom. Pull out your phone and in just a few steps, you can search, chat, and book highly rated pros right in your neighborhood. Plus, you'll know what to tackle next, because Thumbtack is the app that shows you what to do, who to hire, and when. So say goodbye to all those unfinished home projects and say hello to caring for your home the easier way. Download Thumbtack and start a project today.
State of Idaho plaintiff versus Lori Noreen Vallow, a.k.a. Lori Noreen Daybell, defendant.
Welcome to a special episode of 48 Hours. I'm Jonathan Vigliotti. The murder trial of Idaho mother Lori Vallow Daybell is underway. She's accused, along with her husband Chad Daybell, of the unthinkable, murdering her two youngest children, Joshua J.J. Vallow and Tylee Ryan, as well as Chad's late wife, Tammy Daybell. Though originally scheduled to be tried together, the couple had their cases severed, and Chad's trial will begin at a later date. Both have pleaded not guilty. Recently, a judge removed the death penalty from Lori's case, and she could face life in prison if convicted. Suspicion started swirling around Lori and Chad, an author of religious doomsday novels, after her children vanished in the fall of 2019. Shortly after her children's disappearances, Chad Daybell's wife Tammy died under mysterious circumstances. Within weeks of Tammy's death, Lori and Chad were married on a beach in Hawaii. In June of 2020, the children's bodies were found buried on Chad Daybell's Idaho property. Prosecutors say the couple killed all three, fueled by their end-of-times beliefs and to steal Social Security funds and insurance money. The focus of this trial will be the three killings, but Lori Daybell also faces murder conspiracy charges in Arizona connected to the 2019 shooting death of her previous husband by her brother, Alex Cox, who died shortly thereafter. Jury selection began on Monday, April 3rd, and the opening statements were presented a week later on Monday, April 10th. Despite massive interest in the trial, the judge has barred cameras from the courtroom. We've never done this at 48 Hours before, but our team is taking the audio from the proceedings and sharing highlights from those crucial opening arguments in this special episode. Today, I'm joined by 48 Hours producer Greg Fisher, who's been watching all this unfold from inside the courtroom. And Greg, you and I have been on this really since day one. We produced together three 48 Hours episodes. We even saw the grave sites where JJ and Tylee were buried. So thank you for joining us. It's been a long road for you.
Yeah, it has. And I was thinking about that, Jonathan. You and I first worked together early on this story, and it must have been 3 years ago when we were chasing this story around, and you were out with a different producer in Idaho. And we were talking on the phone and getting an interview with the sheriff. Then you and I convinced Chad's five children to do that exclusive interview with us for 48 hours.
Yeah. And I mean, we've seen the story arc too, because early on, the children were believed to be missing. And there was hope that perhaps they would be recovered, found alive. Of course, we were on the story as a different reality played out. You arrived right after jury selection. I'm hoping you could tell us briefly about that process. This was such a publicized case, as you know, and so many listeners know. Did that play a role in the selection process?
Yeah, apparently both sides, the prosecution and the defense, were very focused on the publicity, how much jurors had really heard about the case, what they'd read, what they knew about the case. There were a couple of funny scenarios where people talked about, well, my wife really follows the case and told me all about it, or I've seen everything about this case. And I think most often those jurors were dismissed right away. But both sides came to the realization that they really weren't going to find a complete jury of people who had not heard about this case because it got so much publicity. And while there are some people who claim not to really know very much about it, they settled for jurors who explained that they could keep an open mind.
I was going to say, this case made such international headlines, it's hard to believe anyone would not have at least heard of this case at some point over the past 2+ years. Briefly, do you know the makeup of the jury pool, who they are?
Yeah, so there's 10 men and 8 women.
And the judge barred cameras from the courtroom. Is this typical for a case like this?
You know, we often find that, you know, the judge is the king in his or her courtroom. I think this judge had had a lot of experience with cameras in the courtroom for all the hearings leading up to this trial, and so decided that wouldn't be beneficial for the case. So, you know, the judges tend to have that power.
What was it like for you all these years later to be in the courtroom and to finally see this case go to trial?
It was fascinating. And it really didn't disappoint today. The opening argument, particularly from the prosecution, forceful, brought things together. Not much that we didn't expect. You know, there's been so much attention, so much time spent parsing the details on all of this, that it's hard for there to be unexpected things, but it was, they delivered in the courtroom today, I think.
Let's go ahead and play a clip from Fremont County Prosecuting Attorney Lindsay Blake.
Money, power, and sex. That's what this case is about. The defendant, Lori Vallow Daybell, used money, power, and sex, or the promise of those things, to get what she wanted. What she wanted was money, power, and sex. It didn't matter what obstacles she had to remove to get what she wanted. It didn't matter if the obstacle was a thing or a person. And if it was a person, it didn't matter who.
Wow. I mean, just a few words to sum up strikingly what is a very complicated case.
She went on to explain, you know, making it really simple for the jury, that her allegations were that Lori Vallow Daybell committed these multiple murders for her own financial benefit and her personal pleasure. You know, that was her planting that in their minds so that time and again during the trial, apparently, according to the prosecutor, when you get to why they were dancing around on the beach in Hawaii while the kids were gone, you know, those kinds of issues will come back in their mind. She painted a really stark picture of a heartless killer.
Conspiracy to commit murder, one of the charges she faces. Let me ask you, is the prosecution going to try to prove to the jury that she committed these murders, or she played a role, she fueled them or inspired them?
Yeah, the prosecutor explained to the jury that Lori didn't have to actually commit the murder to be guilty.
But keep in mind that when we talk about the term conspiracy, it is two or more persons combining or conspiring, so essentially a meeting of the minds to commit some crime. And then one of those actors, just one, has to do an overt act in furtherance of that conspiracy.
So in a way, it makes the prosecution's task moving forward a little bit easier, so to speak. We really need to touch on how the prosecution describes Lori's religious beliefs. Let's take a listen to this first, and then on the back end of it, we'll talk about it.
During this first meeting, the defendant and Chad decide that they share purported religious beliefs, and that they share beliefs that the two of them had been here, had been married before in a prior probation. You will hear it talked about multi-creations or a prior probation or a prior life. But regardless of the term used, what they began to tell others is that they were essentially meant to be together. They'd been married in prior lives, prior probations. Not only that, but they both said that they had been prior figures from or persons from the Bible or other religious references.
Greg, I guess if you could kind of summarize this.
There were two interesting themes. One theme that the prosecutor brought up was that Chad and Lori used strange religious beliefs to justify their actions to commit murder. And we've heard a little bit about this already, and they talked about that Chad and Lori created a system to rate people based on their percentage of darkness.
And pretty soon this theory evolved and these teachings evolved. And they started to say, well, if somebody's dark, an evil spirit or an evil entity can come in and they can push the real person out and take over the body.
And once those evil spirits took over, they would become a zombie. Mm. And then there would be justification because you'd have to kill that zombie, which was no longer the person. And then the second theme that the prosecutors hit on was that Lori and Chad assigned themselves status as having this religious status based on previous lives and connections to these different figures. And that then put them, as the prosecutor said it, beyond repentance.
The defendant and Chad used their self-proclaimed religious beliefs and teachings to justify their actions to others, their actions from an affair to murder.
This is a heavy opening statement from the prosecution. How does the defense follow that? What was the defense's opening statement?
Their opening statement was much more understated. Jim Archibald is Lori's defense attorney, and he explained he's a very experienced attorney. He's had private cases and has worked as a public defender as well. And that he's done 27 murder cases. He's really been successful already getting Lori out of the death penalty. So the defense took a very understated approach. First of all, they stressed that Lori's alibi was very simple and direct.
Lori Vallow was in her own apartment in Rexburg, Idaho, when J.J. Vallow and Tylee Ryan died in the apartment of Alex Cox in Rexburg, Idaho. Lori was with Melanie Gibb, David Warwick, and or Chad Daybell. And Lori was in Hawaii when Tammy Daybell died at the home of Chad Daybell in Salem, Idaho. Lori was with Melanie Bedreau and or Audrey Barataria in Hawaii.
So they wanted to make that point clear to the jurors. Jim Archibald, he really picked apart the charges against Lori. At one point, he asked, almost facetiously, he asked the jury and made fun of the vagueness of the charges.
So this charge is, did she kill or did she assist, or did she encourage, or did she command? So in other words, this charge is saying they're not sure what happened, but yet they want you to be sure.
So he seemed to be, you know, making that point to the jury and then saying, remember, we chose you because you said you understood what a reasonable doubt is. Mm-hmm. You would give this a fair question. Then he clearly said to the jurors, if the state doesn't know what happened, yet they're expecting you to decide, he was sowing doubt. Mm-hmm. He was trying to create a sense of doubt.
On that note, we're going to take a quick break. When we get back, Greg, I want to know who else was in the courtroom and what else happened on day one. We'll be right back.
A sense of safety is important to everyone, and that's why I want to talk to you about Simply Safe. It's an advanced security system that protects your entire home so you can rest easy. Simply Safe is completely customizable with advanced sensors to detect break-ins, fires, floods, and more. You can have 24/7 professional home monitoring for less than $1 a day. So try Simply Safe for 60 days risk-free. If you don't love it, you can return your system for a full refund. Plus, we're offering listeners 20% off any new Simply Safe system when you sign up for Fast Protect monitoring. Don't wait. Visit simplysafe.com/48hours. That's simplysafe.com/48hours. There's no safe like Simply Safe.
The comfort of your favorite seat is now your comfy car selling command center, thanks to Carvana.
It doesn't get any better than this.
Your favorite seat's the best spot in the house. Make it even better by entering your license plate or VIN and getting a real offer in minutes.
There really is no place like home.
And speaking of home, Carvana will pick up your car from yours after you finalize your offer. Visit Carvana.com or download the app and sell your car from your comfy place.
Okay, Greg, so we're back. Lori was obviously there in court listening on to all of this. Can you describe her demeanor, what she looked like?
You know, Lori was well put together and very different from the Lori Vallow that made all the headlines, you know, when she kind of flounced into court with a big smile on her face for that early hearing and seemed happy. There was a very different Lori Vallow today. Lori was sedate, serious. She had black framed eyeglasses on, and she sat between her attorneys, you know, occasionally consulting with them. She didn't seem to be making eye contact with anyone, but she paid attention to the judge and what he had to say. You know, it was a much different presentation than we've seen earlier in the process.
Tell me, who were the key players that were in the courtroom today?
Really, the two key players who've been there all along, who even really sparked this whole investigation. It was Kay and Larry Woodcock. Of course, Kay is JJ's grandmother, and Larry Woodcock is her husband.
How did the family behave when they were there? How did they appear?
You know, they were somber and serious, as they always have been at these hearings.
You know, they've been there since day one. Every single court hearing, they would fly in to make it there. I wonder if this was almost a moment, too, that they were celebrating is the wrong word, but something they fought for so hard. And here we are. It's happening.
As you say, they've been fixtures the whole time, demanding justice for JJ and Tylee. And because they're testifying and because Chad's trial will come up, there's a gag order on the case.
Was there anyone that wasn't there that you were surprised about?
Well, there was a lot of talk that Colby Ryan, Lori's first and oldest son, would be there. He wasn't there today.
The prosecution's first witness was Kay Woodcock, as you mentioned, JJ's grandmother. Can you tell us, what did she have to say about Lori as a mother and then the circumstances regarding JJ's disappearance?
Kay was consistent with what she told you and I early on during some of our early interviews, that, you know, she really liked Lori. She loved Lori. She talked about how Lori was a great mom to JJ. Mm. That she was engaged, she went the extra mile. She even explained to the jury today that Lori was graceful to her and Larry, that she remembers one time Lori pulling out a photo album, and that she'd been showing JJ, you know, this is your grandma, these are your grandparents. So it was quite remarkable to hear the beginning of her testimony talk about that. Then, of course, she explained how things changed. You know, all of a sudden, Lori was gone, first for 58 days in a row, never tried to contact JJ one time.
When a mother leaves their child, she left her husband and she left her child for 58 days, and she never reached out to JJ.
And were you with them the entire 58 days?
I was with them a lot of the 58 days. Out of 58 days, I probably was with them well over a month.
So more than 30 days?
Yes.
And during those 30 days, you didn't hear from Lori?
No.
For you, Greg, in that courtroom, what was the most compelling moment today?
Well, certainly Kay's testimony, it was, you know, very compelling. They showed Kay photos of JJ, and she had taken the photos, and she kind of broke down. And, you know, that was pretty intense when she broke down looking at that.
Mrs. Woodcock, do you recognize that document?
I do.
What does it purport to be?
Our beautiful grandson, JJ.
Did you take that picture?
I did.
Is that a true and accurate representation of JJ Vallow?
Yes.
So another thing that was powerful that the prosecution did was show the two grave sites. Those shallow grave sites where the bodies were found, just simple pictures of the grave sites. And then there was a picture also of Tammy lying in a coffin.
When Tylee was found, as we talked about, all that was found was charred remains. Tylee's hands are gone. When JJ was found, his hands were bound and duct taped in front of his body. When Tammy was found, those hands, she was described as a computer whiz, never going to do anything on a computer again. And the defendant and Chad Daybell, getting married on a beach in Hawaii, starting their life together, all obstacles gone.
I went to that property and saw those two grave sites. Chad's children, as you recall, you were there too, showed us where they were found. Very, very haunting images, very haunting images for anyone. And I imagine as the jury pieces this all together, all the more so for them. Based on day one, how do you believe the next several weeks unfold for this trial?
It was very clear from the prosecution that there was going to be a lot of evidence, a lot of witnesses, a lot to go through, a lot of forensics. You know, you really got that sense that there was going to be a lot of testimony from the police, a lot of testimony about forensics, about where and how they found the bodies and what evidence was or was not found on the bodies. There's clearly from the prosecution, there's going to be a lot of text messages, a lot of emails, a lot of overheard discussions, testimony from Lori's friends. Another interesting thing the prosecutor said was, what you're not going to hear, to say that, you know, when the kids were supposedly missing, you're not going to hear stories about Lori being worried or Lori looking for the children or Lori going out of her way. The prosecutor is going to have a wide-ranging and detailed analysis of what went on. But according to the prosecutor, it's all going to come back to money, power, and sex.
Our team at 48 Hours will be on the ground reporting on the Lori Vallow Daybell trial. We plan to bring you continued coverage and analysis throughout the trial, exclusively on the 48 Hours podcast. In the meantime, be sure to follow and listen to 48 Hours wherever you get your podcasts. You can also listen ad-free on the Amazon Music or Wondery app. Greg, thanks so much for debriefing us on the first day of the trial. We're going to be checking back with you soon.
My pleasure. Looking forward to seeing you soon.
It was the biggest scandal in pop music. The stars of Milli Vanilli, the Grammy-winning multi-platinum R&B phenomenon, were exposed as frauds. But none of this was their idea. So whose idea was it? Enter German music producer Frank Farian. He saw the success of acts like Michael Jackson and Prince, and he wanted in, no matter the cost. So he devised the perfect pop heist. two once-in-a-lifetime talents who were charismatic, full of sex appeal, and phenomenal dancers. The only problem? They couldn't sing. But Frank knew just how to fix that. Wondery's new podcast, Blame It on the Fame, dives into one of pop music's greatest controversies and takes a never-before-heard look at the exploitation of two young Black artists. Milli Vanilli set the world on fire, but when the truth came out, Rob and Fab were the only ones who got burned. Looking back now, it's hard not to wonder, why did everyone blame them and not the man pulling the strings? Follow Blame It on the Fame, Milli Vanilli, on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can binge all episodes of Blame It on the Fame early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.
The Hargan women seem to have it all.
From the outside looking in, we were blessed. My mom was amazing.
But as detectives would soon learn, there was a lot going on inside the Hargan household.
Ashley and I have been calling my mom and the house and Helen. Okay. No one's answering.
63-year-old Pamela Hargan gunned down in her own home. Her youngest daughter, Helen, lay dead upstairs.
Patrol, when they arrived, assumed or thought that there might have been a murder-suicide.
But for the detectives on the scene,
there were things about the scene itself that were concerning to us on day one.
Who would want to kill their mother and their little sister?
There is no boogeyman here. It is exactly who we think it is.
I'm Peter Van Sant from 48 Hours. This is Blood is Thicker, the Hargan Family Killings. Listen to Blood is Thicker, the Hargan Family Killings, wherever you get your podcasts.
Join me, 48 Hours correspondent Erin Moriarty, on my podcast, My Life of Crime, as I take on true crime investigations like no other. This season, I'm looking into the secrets within families, cutting straight to the evidence and talking to the people directly involved. Enjoy My Life of Crime on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen ad-free on Wondery Plus.